session number 10802, rule 2.
Me bloom and all Rustville, sorry.
Mr. Richardson, rule 2. You were telling me what it was like at Murmansk.
We went ashore, and all you could see was mainly wooden buildings. It was snow deep everywhere. There didn't seem to be any system of roads or layout of the town. It just seemed to be higgledy-piggledy. The German lines were, I understood, about 20 to 25 mile away, because you could hear their guns in the distance. We seemed to get on very well with the ordinary Russian person. The women there worked, of course, the same as men. The only distinguishing feature was that they wore those padded tops and padded trousers, but they had a skirt which came down underneath. But that's the only difference you could see between men and women. I think one or two of the Russian officers came on board as a courtesy visit, but I didn't see any of those. And the guards on the quayside, of course. And we was there about a week. And then there was a row of lorries arrive one day, and they were full of boxes, wooden boxes. And we had to load these into one of our magazines. They were wired, cross-wired, numbered, and writing on them, and two rope handles. And although it took two of you to carry one, and we had this to load on the ship. Now, one of the pay officers was stood at the gangway, and there was a pay officer at the magazine, and they were taking the numbers of the boxes, off the boxes, as they came in and keeping a record. And it was a gold bullion. I did hear the rumour that it was roughly valued at 5 million. And I understood it was to part pay for some of the lease and lend which was being taken across. We left then and came down for Greenock. But I think the Germany had an idea that we was coming out. Maybe what we got, I don't know. But they laid a minefield for us outside. And we had to stream PVs, paravanes. And we saw quite a number of mines within less than 200 yards of the ship, bobbing about in the water. I think the report was there was about 40-odd mines sighted within 200 yards or just over from the ship. But fortunately, we never touched one. We then made our way down to Greenock. We unloaded the bullion in Greenock, stacked it up on the quayside, put a tarpaulin over it, and told the gangway sentry to keep his eye on it. And next morning there was a convoy of army lorries arrived with outriders and such like. So we come for this bullion. They said, it's there, help yourself. And they took it away.
What kind of speed was the Cairo capable of doing?
Well, I don't know much about the engine room at all, being a seaman, but I think she was just under 30 knots. Flat out.
And was she going more or less flat out to and from Russia?
Well, I should say we was near the top of our speed to get there and doing. Plus we had to, going round the top into Murmansk, we had to cut down speed, of course, for the ice flows and that sort of thing. But as I say, I don't know much about the speed, because that's engine room. They would know more than I would.
So you said that was the first duty that the Cairo had when you were on her. What was the next thing that you remember in the way of voyages on?
We took convoys from Greenock and the Northern Ireland down to Gibraltar. We didn't stay there long. We came back again. And then we went out into the Atlantic.
What were the convoys to Gibraltar like? Was there much enemy attack?
Very little. But being an ACAC ship on a large convoy, we was in the middle for protection against aircraft. So you didn't always know what your destroyers was doing on the outer screen. You had the depth charges go a time or two, but nothing that involved us.
Were you firing much?
No, we didn't fire at all. We had nothing to fire at. I think it was mainly submarine activity. Rather, we had the spotter plane. That was the long range, was it the Focke Wulf? Or the Condor. Spotting the convoy. But he never came near enough to have a shot at him.
But were merchantmen lost on those convoys?
As far as I can remember, we got on all through. I don't think we lost one on that particular convoy.
So you took just one convoy to Gibraltar?
Yes, and returned with another one. Because we were going far out into the Atlantic, out of the bomber range.
Then you went on Atlantic convoys?
We went on to Atlantic convoys then. We used to take the convoy to the edge of the bomber range and then pick up the next convoy and bring it in. But going beyond bomber range to America, we were no use because we'd no ASDIC gear and that. So it was purely ACAC. So we just took them halfway to the edge of the bomber range, picked the next one up and brought it back. If I remember right, we did two trips where we picked up the Queen Mary. Our ship was senior and we'd four destroyers with us to give her an escort once she came into bomber range. But she was doing such a speed and the sea was so bad. And the captain signalled across, he said, unless you reduce your speed, I just can't keep up with you. And he had cut down partly in mountainous seas like we were getting. He never budged him, he's too big. And we landed them at Greenock. And they were the first, or some of the first, I won't say the first, some of the first GIs that came across.
So this was late in 1941?
No, early 42. Because I joined the Cairo in January 42.
Can you describe what it was like escorting an Atlantic convoy?
Well, it was boring a bit. If you was up in the range taker, you might have just sitting there, you watch out. We was working watch and watch, 24 hours at a time. Four on and four off. Until you come to the dog watches. That's the 4 to 6, 6 to 8. So that the next 24 hours, you've got a different watch in the 24-hour circle. Okay. And you just did that day and night until the convoy was finished. So most of the time it was just boring. Unless we never got an attack, an air attack, so we wasn't involved in anything. The destroyers were, but we weren't. And when you get the size of the convoy, you don't always know what's happening on the outer screen. Whether they did any good or not, no idea. You see, you've got to think that those days when we were sailing, you get an order, the ship was under sailing orders, of 2 hours, 4 hours or 6 hours. And when you steamed out, you didn't know where you was going, or how long you was going for, or when you'd be coming back. It was in the captain knew. And in his case, he would have sealed orders, which he wasn't allowed to open until he was so far clear of the land. And they never told you anything. Well, very rarely, I think it was only to the latter end of the war, that some of the navigating officers would put a chart up on the notice board and show you where you were. But up to then, you minded your own business and got on with your job.
How many of these Atlantic convoys did you say you had?
Well, I think we did about half a dozen, including the Queen Mary.
Were you on the ship when it was lost?
Yes. We then sailed from there to, took in a convoy again down to Gibraltar. We was in Gibraltar a short time. And then we came out of Gibraltar. And usually the trick then was to sail out at dusk and into the Atlantic. And during the night, in the middle watch, we'd about turn, steam through the Straits of Gibraltar and into the Mediterranean. The idea was to fox the watchers on shore on the Spanish mainland as to which way we were going. I think the first one we took up, when we took the carrier Eagle and Argus, can't remember who else was with us, and our flight decks was loaded with Spitfires. We then sailed up as far as the Straits of Pandelaria, when the Spits could fly off and reach Malta. But the distance is too great from Gibraltar to Malta for a Spit to fly. And then we'd about turn and come back again to Gibraltar. We used to call these club runs, because we did several of them, escorting the carriers up as far, flying the Spits off, and then returning to Gibraltar again. Then we picked up a convoy from Gibraltar and we sailed for Malta. I think there was 20 odd merchant ships, destroyer escort, myself as the senior commodore. The captain was in charge of the convoy. We also had some of the battle wagons with us, or the heavy cruisers. Malaya, I think, was one. The name of this. And we were sailing for Malta. At the same time as we left, a convoy left from Alexandria, a similar type of convoy, food supplies, petrol and oil and such like, which was a larger convoy. The aim being at the time, or so I understood afterwards, was we were the decoy, if we could draw the Italian fleet, and let the big convoy get through from Alexandria, because Malta was on the verge. There had no petrol, oil, food, and everything. In fact, I think there'd only about a fortnight supply left. It was, if they hadn't survived that, that would have been it. We was attacked very heavily by aircraft. We lost quite a number of ships. And when we got off the Straits of Pandelaria, we met part of the Italian fleet, which was two cruisers, heavy cruisers, and I'm not sure whether it was either four or six destroyers with them. I was on the upper deck at the time, not on watch, standing talking to a group, and all of a sudden there was a sound like a cat meowing. With no animals on board, the lad said, "Well, where's the cat?" And with that, we were straddled by salvos from the Italian cruisers. We hadn't even spotted them then. And you could just see them faintly on the horizon. And then you could see the flashes of the guns as they fired. Well, with that, our skipper steamed up between the remains of the convoy and the Italians and laid a smoke screen to cover the convoy. Two of the destroyers cut through the smoke screen. And as they cleared the smoke screen, going in for a torpedo attack, he hit the first destroyer and smashed it. She was stopped in the water. He hit the second one, not too bad, and she turned to try and tow the first destroyer out of the way of the shellfire. We steamed in then, although before steaming in, our skipper had hoisted a battle challenge to the Italian fleet, and the battle challenge is to fly two white ensigns. That's one at the forward mast and one at the aftermast, in case one gets shot away. It's also a challenge to fight. We then steamed towards them and opened fire. Well, at 4.7s, we couldn't reach him. I was told that we did get near enough and we got one or two hits into him. But at the same time, he was hitting us. His first one was into the sick bay just under the bridge, of which we had some casualties, plus the doctor, I believe, was injured. At the same time, we had one of our own shells explode on the upper deck, which killed two of our ratings.
Through a misfire?
No, through an accident. The shells come up to the mess deck. That's the deck below your turret. It's then put on a slide and slid through the bulkhead. And the loaders the other side pick it up and feed the guns. Now, on an ACAC shell, you have a nose cap and a base clip. Now, they were taking the nose caps off on the mess deck and leaving the base clips on to be taken off when they got to the gun. But they'd had one or two misfires where somebody had forgotten, left the base clip on, which protects the percussion cap and caused a misfire. So to save time, when you're in ACAC fire, you're firing as fast as you can go. And the shell weighs 56 pound. They were taking the base clips off. There was one shell on the slide and one shell behind it. And as the ship fired, the broadside, it vibrated the top one off its hook, came back and struck the point of the second one and exploded. Two lads were killed outright. Well, they're blown to pieces. It also hit the sick bay. And he also hit us several times afterwards. I think there were 18 shells. But we didn't seem to have any more damage inboard. With that, he broke off the action. And he steamed away. Now, in actual fact, he could have come for us and walked through the lot of us. Two of the 8-inch cruisers and six destroyers. He'd have walked straight over us. And he'd have got the convoy. But I think he got the idea that there were some battle wagons behind us, laying beyond the horizon. And we was trying to draw them so the battle wagons could get into contact. On the battle wagons, they had anything from 13-inch up to 15 and 16-inch turrets. So he scarpered, and of course his was always faster than ours. The Italian was very fast on his feet and getting away. We then carried on through the straits, which was heavily bombed again. Also attacked by motor torpedo boats, of which they got several of the merchantmen. And we was rather bottled up in the straits for some time, both day and night attack. We eventually broke out, and we arrived in Malta with ourselves, one destroyer, and two merchant ships. And that's all that was left. We got through, but the big convoy from Alexandria was turned back and didn't get through. And we took the first food in to Malta, plus other supplies on the two merchant ships. The merchant ships was unloaded, I think, within 48 hours. The same time, both Italian and German aircraft were attacking Valletta Harbour to try and get the two merchant ships. And the island, they had large canisters on the quay side, which when there was an air attack on, released smoke. So they laid a smoke screen all over it to try and fool him wherever he was, wherever the ships actually lay, you see. And I think we stayed in about the 48 hours, or maybe a bit longer, and then we got out again. It was too dangerous to stay any longer. We got the ships so we wanted to. And by the time they'd got them emptied, Jerry managed to hit them both and put them under. But they had actually got the food and stuff off first. I remember when we was laid alongside, we opened our canteen and the soldiers queued up, and I think they bought everything we had in the canteen. You could buy a bit of chocolate and cigarettes. I believe there was some tinned fruit and stuff like that they could buy. I think they cleared us all out. Well, we just let it go.
Which soldiers were there?
After they were stationed on the in Malta, in Valletta.
From which regiment?
I don't know the regiments. They'd be off, I don't know. There would be all types of regiments there. There'd be the ACAC crews, there'd be the engineers and all those. I don't know what they were. There was a mixture. And then we got out again. And he chased us back through the straits, the two of us. Oh, the Welshman was with us as well.
This was a fast mine layer.
Fast mine layer. And funny enough, one of the chaps I joined up was on the Welshman, Fred Dickinson. He left us because he could go faster than we could. And we got back to Gibraltar. We arrived back in Gibraltar, and they went in a dry dock to see what damage was done. They found a shell in the bottom of the ship, and an exploded shell, which was removed. The sick bay and the upper deck by the sick bay was patched up. And looking at the ship while she was in dry dock, was about 6 to 8 large score marks down the side of the ship where the shells had hit and ricocheted off. They had actually hit us, but it hit the side. And you could see the large score marks in the metal where the shells had ricocheted off us. We did repairs there. And then after that, we did some more club runs, taking the spits up on the carriers. And then came the big one, which was in the August, of taking a large convoy up to get through to Malta. Malta was again short on aviation spirit. And in the convoy was the tanker Oahe.
Ohio.
I pronounced it wrong. And we acted as escort to the tanker, laying just behind her to protect her. The Germans made a very determined effort to bomb her. They hit her several times. She caught fire once. And I believe, I'm not sure on this, but I believe she had a crashed Junkers 88 on the deck. He was badly damaged and he was listing. But he kept pushing on. And when we got into the Straits, it was in the evening, we thought we'd got the worst part to come, the Narrows. And I was down in the GI's office at the time, which was aft near the officers' cabins. And all of a sudden there was such a great crash. The ship vibrated and come to a standstill. I looked out the GI's office and looked aft, and I could see it was all a mass of wreckage down in the officer's wardroom, in the officer's flats. And I went up topside, and I found that we'd been hit by a torpedo from a submarine. And the propellers and rudder was gone. The quarterdeck turret was blown onto its top, which were manned by Marines. I think most of those were killed. And as I turned and looked over on the port side, yeah, it would be the port side. It was the Liverpool. She came circling past a bow. She'd been hit in the engine room with the torpedo and was listing to starboard and out of control. And over on the other side of us was a merchant ship. She went as well. And it was an Italian submarine, the Maximum was the name of the sub.
Was this daytime or night time?
Evening. And he got inside the screen, the fire screen. He fired a salvo of torpedoes. And luck on his part,